evening. It's Teresa Tadiri, my show live from the Double Wide every Tuesday night here from 8 to 10 p.m. I try and be here when I'm in town. You know, I'm working a lot these days, often running. I'm a musician, a singer-songwriter, and this show I like to focus on the music of my friends, either people I've worked with in the past or people that I've known and whose work I love. And that's kind of an interesting mix, you know, because I've been doing this for quite some time. And I also love to do interviews with people who are local here and who also have something to do with the music business. And tonight, I feel so very, very fortunate to be interviewing our very own Arnold Levine, Arnaldo, known to us as Arnaldo here. Recently, Arnaldo has been pulling in the most astonishing people for interviews. Not that everybody in Occidental isn't astonishing, because we all are pretty astonishing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Everyone in Sebastopol, pretty much West County, is a county full of astonishing people.
That's why we live here, because it is.
Yep. So, but Arnaldo has somehow managed to procure interviews with some of the most some of the great luminaries alive today in the music business, music industry, legends: Brian Auger, Richard Thompson, Dave Davies.
Just had the Van Dyke Parks last week.
Oh, Van Dyke Parks was on as well, and we wonder. We look at Arnaldo, and Arnaldo looks like a kind of a normal guy. Sort of, you know, but we wonder, how is it, Arnaldo, that you are able to score these interviews? So this evening on KOWS 107.3 FM LP local radio, we'll be speaking to Arnaldo Levine, and we'll find out how the heck he's been doing this. First of all, though, and also I want you to know that Arnaldo has brought in a whole bunch of wonderful music that he's heard and that were influencing him back in the day in the history of what we're going to find out about Arnaldo. And I'm going to play one more cut, and then we'll come back and we'll talk to him, the mysterious Arnaldo.
Ho, ho, ho.
Directly.
The government wants to close them down, but we want them to stay. They're playing sounds that we all like, so don't take them away.
When you're walking down the street with your transistor radio, everybody has a good time. You can dance to the beat of your transistor radio, even when the sun don't shine. You can hear your favorite rock and roll, rhythm and blues with a lot of soul.
Some swinging DJs playing top 40 records, they can really turn you on. Now the government's trying to close down the stations, what'll happen when they're gone? You won't hear the music that you like any old time of day or night.
Oh, we love
We love the pirate stations. There's some significance to this. Arnaldo, I've been listening to you now and your guests, etc. And so this is not the first time. This is not your first stint as a radio personality, is it?
No, I was spawned in the cauldron of pirate radio in London in the 70s.
In the early 70s?
From 72 to about almost 77. Yeah, now,
that was the real heyday of the pirate experience, wasn't it? Of the pirate phenomena.
Yeah, on land-based, because before we were, all the land-based guys were inspired by what happened in the 60s.
Right.
Hence that song we just played was based on the pirate ships that steamed around the coast of England in 63.
Right. So let's assume that not everybody is an old dinosaur like you and me, and that there might be some people under the age of, 50s listening in who don't know about what the pirate stations are. Could you fill us in?
Well, basically, in Britain at that time, in the early 60s, there was only the BBC. There were no commercial stations, believe it or not, only government controlled. And so, obviously, there was only four stations to boot. So it was very limited.
Yeah.
As to what, say, the younger, there was only one station that played pop music. And so this wonderful entrepreneur called Ronan O'Reilly, he got this ship called Caroline, and he hauled it out to the North Sea and started beaming into southeast England, into London. And all of a sudden, we had amazing music coming in, good quality and American style, really zappy and not the BBC boring stuff.
Stodgy.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so this ship, which is really an incredible idea to do this. So he was out there on the boat, and how did he transmit, and what, how big was the frequency? How many people were able to pick it up? Was it as huge as operation, say, as cows?
Oh, no, it was bigger than cows, I must admit. It's hard to imagine.
I know.
High atop here on Howard's Cafe.
But. Yes, in the media building, the cows media building. But what was the frequency? How was he able to do this?
Back then, there wasn't, believe it or not, FM.
Right.
There was no such thing in 63. And so there was only AM. So the boat was only 100 foot long, 150 foot long, an old scow, you might say, and they just rigged up an antenna from one end to the other, and they transmitted to southeast England. So in London, we could pick it up really well, and it went 24 hours a day, which the BBC didn't do.
Now, because BBC had the monopoly, of course, was this pirate station considered? I mean, they had to go outside of a certain limit, from the city.
Oh, that's right. There was the famous 3 mile limit. So basically, they parked themselves outside the 3 miles, and they were in international water.
Oh, gotcha.
And so, and then once Radio Caroline started, suddenly lots of other people thought that's a good idea. And suddenly there were literally dozens of ships and rafts, and there was even these old Second World War forts that were built on like sandbars in the middle of the channel. People even took those over and started transmitting, even Screaming Lord Sutch. Remember him?
I've heard of him.
Oh, amazing guy. He was. He started one, and Radio Sutch, yeah.
And so these guys were, once they were past the 3 mile limit, then they were no longer illegal. So could they come in to shore and not be arrested or be bothered?
Did
they have to sneak in the dark of night in the cloak and everything?
Well, from 1963 to 1967, they could do that. But then the government.
Government.
Government. Don't trust the government.
Yeah. They put out the Wireless Telegraphy Act of 1967, and which banned anybody in Britain from supplying or helping the pirates. And so what happened? Well, it didn't stop them. Some it stopped, but others started being supplied from Holland and other more liberal countries, you could
say.
And
when you say supplied, would that mean the broadcast equipment itself or...
Food, water.
Food, water. What you need to live.
Records, I suppose. Oil to fuel the boat and the generators.
Just everything.
They were like little towns and they just broadcast. And they went all around the coast. They went to Ireland, up to Scotland. There were boats everywhere broadcasting.
So now, were you ever out on one of these boats?
I didn't. Some of my DJs who are on my station in the early 70s, they went out, but I was too busy running my own station. But they went out and did some DJ, a little bit of DJing and hung out on the boat.
So now, you were a young guy at that time. You're still a young guy, but you were even younger then. And you were listening to these pirate stations. What was the buzz going on in town when these stations started up? What happened?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, you've got to put it in the context of what was happening at that time. 1963 in England. I know it hadn't happened in America yet, but we were in full fling of Beatlemania and the whole British music. You know, it was happening in England just like it would a year later in America.
Yes. So, this is 63.
63. So, I mean, amazing stuff was going on. Everyone was going berserk, basically. Yeah. I mean, I was 13, so it was like in the midst of that mayhem. And so all of a sudden, you have all these pirate ships roll up and start broadcasting. I mean, what more could a teenager want?
That's right. And so that
you're a gym lad.
Yeah, because the Beatles wouldn't be exactly your standard BBC fare, would they?
Well, I mean, they quickly were co-opted by the Beatles, by the BBC.
Yeah.
And, but, you know, it was, they played the Beatles, obviously, and the Stones and all the usual, but they would play a lot of American stuff and a lot of the people who wouldn't normally get played.
Which is the pirate station.
The pirate station.
But I meant by the BBC, you know, the pirate stations were so pyrotechnic because the BBC was not really playing that much of the pop music. I mean, the pop music the BBC was playing was kind of watered down, or was it more...
Yeah, it was a step behind what was happening.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, typical what you would imagine a government-run bureaucracy, you know, doing at that time.
Were the pirate stations, as you say, they were broadcasting 24 hours a day?
24 hours a day, most of them.
All day.
And yeah, so, I mean, we'd be in school and we'd have our transistor radios going up our inside our jackets and we'd be listening to them in class and, you know, just it was like a phenomenon. And then they would get really brazen, the pirates. They would actually open up clubs in downtown London and they would have, like, you know, discos at lunchtime where they would have groups and the DJs from the boats would come. And every day there would be like a big lunchtime show.
I would imagine that some of these pirate personalities became pretty well known.
Well, in fact, they did and are. In fact, a lot of them, well, in 1967, when a lot of the boats had to shut down, a lot of them were employed by the BBC.
And
this day, they still are. Tony Blackburn and a few others are still there.
Wow. So they became, there were some real big personalities from the pirate stations.
Yes, Kenny Everett was like amazing. If you ever mention to anybody who knew the pirates about the DJs, Kenny Everett was
the
amazing.
Guy.
He was the guy.
Why? What made him so interesting and different?
He was totally crazy. You know, the BBC, you know, was so staid, you couldn't, like, put one step outside the boundary. But Kenny was just totally berserker. And so we loved it. We drank it up.
Yeah. So now there you're a young guy. You were 13 in 1963.
Yeah.
So you're 58, 59?
59.
Now. And which is still, you know, in my way of thinking, just a pup. But... because I want to be just a pup too forever. But did you decide at some time you were listening to these pirate stations, did you think, well, this is something I want to do, this is You did.
Well, yeah. I mean, in 67, you know, basically most of them shut down. Caroline kept on going. And in fact, Caroline is still going. You can get it on the internet. It's still on the boat and it's still broadcasting over the air and on the internet. So you can get Radio Caroline still.
I'll be darned.
But gradually, a lot of them faded away because they couldn't get supplied. And then, and it was in just, yeah, it was basically 1972, one day my friend Jeffrey, he gave me a call up and said, listen in on the radio. So I tuned into a station, and it was a pirate station. So we thought, wow, that's, you know, fabulous. And so we went to a secret meeting and met some other pirates, and we purchased a transmitter. And took it home and rigged up an antenna and started broadcasting.
You started broadcasting from your, and where was it? Were you in a flat? Were you in a, where were you?
Yeah, well, either my place or his house, or I had a flat, and so we just broadcast that initially just from those places. We got a bit more pretty outrageous later, but...
So you started just... You just went home, you bought a transmitter, you thought, let's do this, and you sat down, and you'd never been behind a microphone before, you hadn't gone to school for broadcasting or anything like that,
we love music, we play, you know, play music, and, you know,
and how
that,
old were you then, how old?
That was 22.
You were 22 years old?
Yeah.
So it was about 1972?
Two, yeah.
How fun. And you, and so, what was the music? Do you remember what your favorite... What were your favorite records to spin were back then?
Well, obviously, we didn't have a big library, you know, like now. But, you know, liked oldies, because the BBC didn't even play oldies.
Uh-huh.
They just played the pop stuff that was at the time. But they never went back, you know, and listened to great stuff. So, and we had all different... gradually, other friends came in, and you know, some did jazz or folk or classical or you know, pop or blues.
Somewhat like cows, where everybody had their own focus, perhaps.
Exactly.
They desire. Let's play a cut from one of the songs that you might have chosen during that time too.
Well, one of the great. Let's do just a crazy one, number six,
okay.
You know, another thing about the BBC, they were always banning songs.
Yes. Oh, good. Is this one of those banned ones?
Yeah. So
excellent.
This was banned by the BBC. So, of course, immediately all the pirates started playing it.
Right. Okay. This is going to be the big number one hit, probably, because it was banned by the BBC. We're speaking to Arnaldo Levine. He's one of our presenters here at KOWS 107.3 FMLP radio in downtown beautiful Occidental, broadcasting to you 24 hours a day. Whether you like it or not, we're here. Okay, let's listen to our...
They like it.
They like it. Better like it. Because we're pirates. Arr!
Arr.
Oh, no!
I can't stand still because you've got me going. When your hips are showing, I take you, girl, as you're standing there. Your low-cut slacks and your long black hair. Don't want you going around with no one else, 'cause when I'm with you, I can't control myself. Defense is down and you got me shaking. So that my nerves are breaking. If you knew me like I know you, girl, your knees would bend and your hair would curl. You make me move, yeah, like no one else. And when I'm with you, I can't control myself. Got this feeling that's inside of me. It makes me think of how things used to be. It makes me feel alright when I'm with you at night. What do these things for no one else? But when I'm with you, I can't control myself.
That was the Troggs, right?
Yes, I can't control myself.
I can't, what's the name? That's the name of that? I can't control myself?
And that's why the BBC banned it.
No, they wouldn't like that. The BBC doesn't want to hear that you can't control yourself. You're British.
Yes, we are not amused.
We're not amused. No, we are not. So, you know, we're speaking to Arnaldo Levine, one of our presenters here at KOWS 107.3 LPFM. You know, local radio. And Arnaldo has been astonishing all of us because every week we look, we have a little bullet board with, that we send through the email announcing our shows and if we can score a good interview or whatever. And every week Arnaldo is speaking to some legend. He's got some damn legend on the and we're wondering, well, of course, the whole world wants to appear on Cows. Who wouldn't?
I mean, well, absolutely.
Yeah, we broadcast throughout the entire width and breadth of the parking lot. It bounces off of somebody's head, lands somewhere on one side of Sonoma. And so, we stream to up to 20 people. 20 whole people can stream at one given. So it's understandable why Richard Thompson would want to be interviewed. They're clamoring. The legends.
My God.
Yeah, the legends are all.
I have to beat them off.
Yeah, I have to beat them off to get. So here we have. So we're discussing with Arnaldo how the heck he did this. And we're finding out that Arnaldo has had a rather nefarious career.
I love that word.
Yeah, nefarious. From the past in England as a pirate radio station operator and programmer and DJ. And one thing I wanted to clarify before we Arnaldo was talking about the pirate stations broadcasting from the boats,
right,
and that it became a little difficult for a lot of the boats to stay in business.
Right.
Because
after 1967. Yeah.
Because of this act.
Right.
This
dastardly act.
Dastardly act where people could get prosecuted for contributing to the welfare of the boat in any way, shape, or form, oil, gas, food, anything. And so people started to broadcast from the mainland on the land, but what's the word I'm looking
for?
Clandestine.
Maybe.
Oh, I think that's the perfect word.
Yes.
Clandestine. And Arnaldo was one of the first people to to start a clandestine land-based pirate radio station. Is that, did I say that?
Pretty close. I'm one of the first.
One of the first.
There was a lot of, I mean, there was a lot of people, like some were like almost hams just doing it occasionally.
Right.
But there was just, you know, a few who were doing it like, 24 hours a day as much as they could.
Right.
Know.
And so that was you guys?
And yeah, and we were one of those who tried to, you know, just depended. Obviously, everything was thrown together with the bits of wire and duct tape.
Not like this.
Nothing like
this. The state of the art. Yeah. But so you were 22 years old. You had a partner in crime. His name was
Jeffrey.
Jeffrey, is he still in broadcasting?
No, he's been on.
He's been reasonable.
Some film and music, but not broadcasting.
Mm. So you're 22, and you're keeping the station going 24 hours?
No. We just do it a number of evenings or over the weekends. You know, it just depends because we're working and doing things as well. So.
Right. And so now let me. And so you're broadcasting. You're 22. You're playing the music that's really. It's really now. You're really in the hotbed of English.
Right.
You know, that last bit of the 60s, that mid 60s, and into the 70s was really that whole English sort of. I don't know what you'd call it, rock revival or whatever. You're really in the midst of it.
Right.
Let me ask you then, were you ever, now that you're running this operation on land, weren't you a little nervous? Weren't they looking for you? Were the BBC, you know, trying to track down these pirate guys on land?
Well, actually, the BBC's had surrogates. They didn't directly track us down. Funnily enough, it was the post office.
Dang!
Because they controlled all means of communication.
Uh-huh.
That's why it just fell into their jurisdiction because they did because they sent mail, they looked after the TV and radio as well. So they would send out, the post office would send out their vans and their guys, and they would, you know, prowl the streets looking for us. The rain-slicked, oily streets of London.
But how would they find you? Did they find the land-based pirate?
Oh, yeah, station? Yeah. We would get caught. You know, sometimes we'd escape. But no, they would do triangulation and things. See, with AM, medium wave, you just need to, like, go in a couple of different directions with almost just a good radio, and you can get a field strength
meter.
And you can just triangulate and wham, you know, you can get pretty close to it.
You know, I can just see you, you know, running like crazy away from that mean postman.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
It's like, Jesus, it's hard to imagine. So they would have their little, what, their little thing, their little dish or whatever, and they're honing in on you, mm-hmm. and what would a bust look like? What would it be?
Well, they would find out where we are, then they would go to the local police station.
Oh, God.
And get the rozzers, and, you know, depending on different times, a bit later, we got very notorious, you know, politically and all that sort of stuff, and so they would always turn up, you know, with police and axes and dogs and the whole regalia.
Wow.
You know, and bash the doors down.
Oh, my God.
That sort of stuff. But, they would come in and get a warrant and...
And haul you off to the goal?
If we were still there, that was the thing, you see.
Oh, you might have had time to jump out a window or tie some sheets together or something.
Exactly. And once, what's funny as well... the tricky thing about a transmitter is that it sets the frequency. What sets the frequency was a crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the transmitter didn't have the crystal in, they couldn't prove that you were transmitting on that frequency.
So what would you'd pull out the crystal and swallow it?
Yeah, we would hide it or something, you know, because they were valuable. And, and they would walk around and harumph and be angry and then have to walk out again.
Yeah, because you say there was no crystal, you'd just say, we were just pretending. We do this every day after school.
Exactly.
There you go. That's so silly.
Just innocent school children.
Just playing. Yeah. Playing and broadcasting. Don't leave us alone. Well, I think that's a fascinating thing. Did you ever go to jail? Did you get taken in or hauled in for any?
Oh, we got, busted a number of times.
Would you have moved your operations when you were busted?
Oh, well, that was the whole thing nearly every week, especially after the first, you know, after they busted my place and then my friend Jeffrey's place. Obviously, we couldn't really broadcast from there again because they would obviously know. So then we had to start, you know, wandering around and finding a new place every time. And so we got to be pretty ingenious. We were in some pretty amazing places. We broadcast them, especially because we got involved in the squatting movement in London, and so that opened a whole world of
potential
places from embassies to mansions in the country to squalid squats.
Squalid squats. You know, I was in Europe at the time as well. I was living all over the place for about 6 years. I was in Europe altogether. And 4 years of just endless travel. And I hit upon a Krakshaus, they call it, in Amsterdam, which was the squatters movement there. And I lived in a house that had been abandoned, basically. And it was taken over by a bunch of young, beautiful young Italian dope addicts. And me and my boyfriend downstairs. They were fascinating. Can you talk a little bit about the squatters movement in London? People might not know of this.
Yeah, basically in the 60s and 70s, you know, it got very expensive and difficult to live in London, get apartments and places. And also, a lot of the housing stock was very old. And it wasn't in like top-notch condition, like it didn't have an inside toilet or it didn't have hot water. And so the owners or the councils who own them would leave them empty. And I'm talking about thousands and thousands of housing units. And there's all these people who didn't have anywhere to live.
Right.
So, and because of a law which literally dates back to the Magna Carta... that you couldn't, once you got in, I mean, I did this, once you actually were in a house, as long as they didn't see you breaking into the house, once you were in, there was nothing they could do. to you.
Right.
You know, they'd have to start proceedings to evict you or whatever if they wanted to. But, I remember once, we just got into a place, we were sitting on the floor and with one little candle, and a couple of policemen walked in and said, oh, what's happening here? And said, oh, we're squatting. I said, oh, okay.
Okay.
Just walked out.
Goodbye, then.
Yeah.
Lovely.
So... that was basically the law.
So you would move when you'd be busted. You'd have to pick up the whole kit and caboodle, and somebody would have to, you know, cough up the crystal, and you'd start your whole thing all over again in a new place.
Yeah, and sometimes they would take our equipment, like our transmitter, you know, because sometimes we'd just maybe have. It wouldn't be manned, and they would come across it.
Oh, they'd come across it when you weren't there.
That would be
very daunting, wouldn't it? To come in to broadcast and
it's gone. But luckily we had these great engineers that were like really intuitive. This guy, you know, Simon. There'd be this pile of junk in the corner, and like I would help him, you know, in about an hour it would start glowing, and then we'd be on the we'd be on the air again.
Oh wow!
I mean, it was wonderful to just defy them like that.
You know, it sounds to me like such an adrenaline trip that you were constantly riding because here you have this great music, your outlaws presenting it, and you know, you never know from one minute to the next where you're going to be, but you keep doing it. There must have been a lot of, by the way, we're at KWS 107.3 FMLP community radio here in downtown Fabulous Occidental. We're speaking with Arnaldo Levine, who is a very, we'll find out more about, but I is very well known in England for having been one of the early pirate landlocked pirate radio operators in England during the day. And we're finding out why Arnaldo has been able to score these incredible interviews with people like Brian Auger and Richard Thompson. And tomorrow you're speaking to...
Reg Presley of the... Trogs!
Of the Trogs. Oh, my God. And they were a groundbreaking group. They were so edge, cutting edge. And
like really punkish.
Yeah, very punkish. Yeah, they were like... Ugh.
Yeah.
The Trogs were cool. I'm going to assume now, because Arnold, you're a young guy, you're doing this pirate radio thing, that there must have been a lot of support for you from the kids, from people and from the musicians themselves. I think the musicians themselves really, really must have appreciated you, because you're getting their music out to an audience the BBC would never have ever presented most of the musicians that you were presenting. And you're introducing them to an audience, and you're fortifying the audience that they already have. The musicians must have been thrilled with these pirate radio stations.
Well, somewhat, because they had to be careful, remember, because we were illegal. So if they appeared to be too close to us, there may be ramifications.
Aha.
So we had to get records, you know, under the counter type stuff and things, you know, just so that they wouldn't, there would be no trace back to us for them. So they had to be careful.
Uh-huh. Would they come in? Would you get some of the musicians to come in for interviews, or no? That would be very dangerous for them.
Occasionally, we'd have some. We would definitely do a lot of live stuff. We did have, we'd have a squat, and we just, as long as there was enough, one bulb, we would run everything off of that. And a whole band.
Plug into the one outlet. No. Yeah.
It all glowed the wire, but my main claim to fame, I suppose, my one claim to fame in the radio world, I think, is I was the first person to play The Clash in the world.
Oh, my God.
Because they were in the part of the squatting movement, Joe Strummer, well, he wasn't called that then.
Yeah.
Woody, his name, he called himself Woody Wooderson. Anyway, he was in a group called the 101.
Uh-huh.
101ers. 101 was actually 101 Elgin Avenue, which was the main squatting street in the west of London. And
what neighborhood is that in?
Basically, Elgin Crescent, I suppose you would call it the Harrow Road, just north of Westbourne Park.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And where was I? Where was I?
I'm so sorry.
Oh, it was in Westbourne Park. Yeah. And where were we?
101.
And oh, the 101 is, yeah. And, excuse me.
The Clash, how the Clash, the genesis of the Clash's name, I think.
Yeah, and the 101ers were the squatting band, and, uh-huh. and Joe or Woody was the leader of that band. And so anyway, we used to hang, we in fact broadcast from his house, his squat on the 101, it was 101 Elgin Avenue, and we actually broadcast a few times from his place. Then one day I was, you know, just hang out there, and then one day he came in and flipped this cassette to me. He said, "Hey, Supremo," that was my name, "check this out, you know, we just got this finished." And it was the first Clash, you know, literally the first Clash demo came out. And so I stuck it on the radio that, you know, whenever it was, that day after or whatever.
Do we have anything by the Clash on your list here?
I don't. I've got it on my iPod, I think, but I'm not sure if I...
Oh, that's all right. That's a great story, though. You were the first person to play... A cut from a Clash.
The whole album, yeah.
Jeez.
I wish I had that tape now, though.
I know. And would you be speaking, of course, too, when you were playing these songs. You would be talking and
yeah.
And what are some of the most? I mean, how long did you were you a DJ for the on the your pirate station?
From 72 to four nearly 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's a long time.
Yeah, just, you know, sometimes it would be off and on, but, you know, if we ran out of money and equipment, because they would also take our, when they came and did take our stuff, they took our albums as well.
They took your music library.
They would take our discs, our turntables and all that stuff, so.
And would they ever be returned to you, or would they have gone forever into the nice policeman's...
I think once we got them returned, otherwise they would just sort of obfuscate and it would make it impossible to get them back, basically.
Those bastards.
Yeah.
Can you imagine what those records now? I mean, geez.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Had some lovely stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, we kept on doing it because we believed in it. You know, we wanted a free radio where there was more choice, and that's what... you know, kept us going was the whole point of just like Cowards, of creating
an alternative, you know,
alternative voice out there.
Yeah. So your name, your handle in the day was Supremo?
Well, El Supremo.
El Supremo, of course. Ladies and gentlemen, we have finally found it is El Supremo with us.
That sort of migrated to that name. Because what happened is because after they caught me for the first time, they knew me and they knew my voice.
Uh-huh.
So I had to change my name and my voice. So I started putting on, I first called myself the Supreme Dialect and put on, you know, the Daleks from Doctor Who?
Yes.
So I spoke like they did.
Yes.
As a DJ.
Can you do that little some of that for the boys and girls at home?
And now we will have the drugs. I cannot control myself. You will enjoy.
Something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Make it, you know, get it, cover your tracks a little bit. It'd be hard for them, you know, unless a policeman is at the post office and a guy behind him is saying, "I would like to post," and then he makes the cuff.
Exactly.
So, well, that's good. That was very good. But it's, I have to tell you, it's a little annoying. It's just, I'm wondering, so how long did you actually speak like that, Supremo?
I suppose for about a year or so. But then I changed to El Supremo and put on this really fake American accent.
Oh, cool. Can you try?
I don't know if I can do it anymore.
Yeah.
I'm not there.
Yeah, I understand.
So I'm not sure.
You know, give it a try.
Oh, God.
Just come on. Listen.
Now, folks, on Raider Conquer, we got Doug Sam and Bob Dylan.
It's great. I would place that accent if I were just, you know, in England. I would think, oh, my God, I would be overcome with nostalgia for my home, my homeland.
Exactly.
Oh, that guy has got to be the milk-fed boy from...
Wisconsin.
Yeah, Wisconsin. Well, that was great, Arnaldo. So I can see how they would have had a hard time. You know, you were slippery as an eel.
But woo, you bet.
Yeah, that was very cool.
It was fun.
And how long did you have El Supremo? How long were you El Supremo?
A couple of years, I suppose.
And you would be with that wonderful American accent that you just...
Mm-hmm.
untraceable American.
An unreproducible.
Incomprehensible accent. We're speaking with Arnaldo Levine, who is one of the presenters here at KWS 107.3 LP, community radio here in beautiful downtown Occidental. And we're finding out that Arnaldo Levine is not actually Arnaldo Levine, but El Supremo, who right up there with that guy who jumped out of the airplane with all the money and everything, has been one of the great mysteries. Whatever happened to El Supremo is, you know, has been turning the clock in London for many, many years. People wondering what happened.
Oh, yeah. Where did he go?
So you were El Supremo for a couple of years. People probably understood that you were disguising yourself and doing...
Right.
Yeah, they had an idea.
So.
They think that some, you know, intergalactic American accented guy. And so you were doing this. You kept this up. Now, how were you making a living? I mean, this sounds like it took a little time out of your life here.
Well, it did. At first, I was just, you know, doing my regular sort of engineering-y job. Uh-huh. And but then, you know, it started getting a bit, you know, I got too busy to work, really,
to do
my regular work. So I decided, to take, let the government help me. And so I went on the dole and
would take
the money from then and then would broadcast illegally.
Well, you could go and say you had a dreadful speech impediment. You could go in and get be on the doll.
You hardly needed anything back then.
Yeah. What was your day job that you had to give up?
Oh, mechanical engineering.
Oh, mechanical engineer. Yeah. What does a mechanical engineer do all day?
Well, it depends. They have different things. They can be designing building, you know, the guts of a building.
Yeah, or the insides of
engines,
machines and engines. And so my dad was a mechanical engineer, and I never could for the life of me figure out what he did. But he was inventing things all the time, and you know, any steam traps he loved to talk about.
Oh, I love steam traps.
Yeah, he loves steam traps.
I love the digital thermostatic ones.
He died before this came out, but he would have loved that.
Oh, he would have.
Yeah. I hope he died because we buried him. So you decided finally you had to get rid of your day job because you really wanted to, and you went on the dole, which is you got equivalent to food stamps and a couple of pounds a week.
In England, that was enough to live on.
Yeah. And especially when we're young like that, and in the late 60s and early 70s, people were just very chummy and helping each other.
Right.
We were kind of anti-capitalism anyway and just...
Exactly.
Yeah. So you're on the dole, and thank God, because you were subsidized, because you were a great artist, El Supremo. I really think you were helping art.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And you worked that way. Were those stations subsidized in any way? Did anybody send to the stations money? Were people helping to support you?
Not a lot.
Yeah.
We would actually get a lot of people would send like stamps and things, little postal orders, just money that we can use so we can, buy stamps and send, just basic stuff like that. It came in dribs and drabs like that.
But you were probably pretty much a celeb, weren't you? I mean, you had to have been.
Well, very totally minor. I mean, although we were, that picture of me, we did get a lot of publicity.
Now, which picture are you pointing? Because
picture, Radio Concord, you see on the wall
there?
Oh, is
that you, Arnaldo?
That's me.
Wow, you have long hair there, and you're...
Hair?
Just had hair.
Yeah.
That right there. But no, I'm going to have to look at that more closely. I can be able to describe it to our radio audience.
Yeah, that was from the Melody Maker. It was a big English music
newspaper.
Yeah.
I remember it.
It was like the Times.
Yeah.
It was really very well looked up. And yeah, they did a huge couple of page spread on us. And the reporter who eventually came on, became the managing editor. He stayed all night and the whole weekend. And
he had a wonderful time.
And he had a great time.
So I'm imagining, Arnaldo, that you were a bit of a celeb, because one of the reasons I believe this is that the level and quality of the interviewees that you've been getting on a regular basis, these people must have known you back then and known El Supremo at any rate.
No.
So how are you getting these wonderful interviews?
Oh, it's very, very difficult, but... Basically, you ask them.
You've been asking.
Yeah.
And you talk to them a little bit about your past in radio as well.
Yeah, you tell them, you know, try and make a connection.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, used to play your records back when or whatever. Yeah. And
they say, of course, love. I'll be there.
Exactly.
You know, because my English accent is almost as good as your American. we can do that. You know. But I really know, because being a musician myself, that what you supplied, what you did, was hugely beneficial to the artists, and they would be always forever in your debt. For instance, we remember here in the first FM station was KSAN that we remember in San Francisco, Tom Donahue, right. And it was the first FM station that started to play rock, and it's a long time ago, it's in the 60s now too, and
right.
and people talk about him in Dusty Roads or Dusty Street, I think it was right. Dusty Street, and people remember them. Richard Gossett now is at KRCB. Do you know Richard Gossett?
No, I don't know.
Heard him? But these guys were just so important to us because at the time we only had AM, and the AM right. frequency was all just kind of gloppy pop, you know? And to get those first FM stations was similar to the idea of what the pirate stations were providing.
Exactly.
Yeah. yeah. And then a whole world opened up.
Right, exactly. And technology provided that whole new world.
Yeah.
And that was the beauty of it. And but that took a while in England. You know, we didn't get our first FM station until, I think, 74,
uh-huh.
Capital Radio in London.
And did that start opening up the markets then for radio in England then at that time?
Yeah, the laws, they changed the law for allowing commercial stations, so they started opening after that time. But,
right.
You know, we still went on because there was not an opportunity for small stations, you know,
right.
community stations. And and even after I left in 77, people, you know, kept on trying. What we started kept on going.
Yes.
And in 83, believe it or not, Margaret Thatcher signed a small, you know, a small micro transmitting radio act. And so it opened up for hundreds and hundreds of new radio stations all over Britain.
So it's no longer illegal, and people aren't going to get busted for selling you some sardines or something, or trying to get out.
Exactly.
You can go ahead and do that. We're speaking to Arnaldo Levine, who is a presenter here at KOWS, KOWS 107.3. And we've been finding out a lot about Arnaldo's past as a pirate broadcaster. Back in the day, in the early 70s, he was one of the early landlubber pirate stations broadcasting illegally.
Yeah.
Because the BBC held the monopoly for all broadcasting, in both radio and television. And so now are they still looking for you, Arnaldo? I mean, are you here in America dodging some kind of, you know, old British bullet that's, you know, meant for you?
Right, after all that plastic surgery.
Sorry, yeah, I know. Everything. are you a fugitive?
I hope so.
Yeah.
You know, you like to think that you are, you know. Yeah. Just
somebody wants me.
Yeah.
That'd be good. Yeah. But so you're not, nobody's looking for the
No, I mean, when I did get caught, I paid my fine and everything.
Yeah.
I've still got some of the, you know, the stuff somehow has survived. I've got the fine, what I paid and everything.
Oh, good for you. You got a frame somewhere.
Exactly.
Arnaldo, let's play something from your wonderful list here. Choose something you'd like to hear, and then we'll take a small break and get back to interviewing Arnaldo Levine.
Okay, number 14.
Oh, that sounds good.
One of my favorites.
14 is one of my favorites, too. Okay, let's play whatever it is.
Melting Pot.
Melting Pot. Mm-hmm.
drinking kiss, mixed with yellow chinkies. If you lump it all together, well, you got a recipe for a get-along scene. Oh, what a beautiful dream. If it could only come true, you know, what we need is a great big melting pot. It really doesn't matter what religion you choose. No, no, no. Ooh, make a lady pay for. Oh, the Mrs. Graceful. You know the living could be tasteful. Together in a loving machine.
I better call up the queen.
It's only fair that she knows, you know, you know. What we need is a great big melting pot.
Was interesting. Now that's a song I'm not familiar with, and that was a big hit in England, right?
Yeah, big hit. It was number one for a few weeks by Blue Mink and called Melting Pot.
And now, who was the singer? The woman, May.
Yeah, Madeline Bell.
Madeline Bell. What a great voice.
Yeah, she was a Motown, I think, backup singer in Motown, and she found her way over to England, and was doing some backup and things, and I think with Dusty Springfield.
Singer in life, Dusty Springfield.
And so she, you know, ended up in England doing that stuff.
Uh-huh. And that was a big hit. Now, there were a lot of big hits over there that we didn't hear. So I think tonight we'll scoot around a little bit on your song list and see. Now we were talking, we just got a call from Laura. We want to thank Laura. Whoever's listening out there, you're more than welcome to give a call in. And if you'd like to talk to Arnaldo, if you have any stories yourself from, maybe you're a pirate radio person yourself, or a pirate, or maybe you know someone with a parrot. But whatever it is, we don't care. You want to call us, that's fine. And we are at 707-874-1073. Here, 874-1073 in the 707 area code, and we are cows. You know what, Arnaldo? I think I might should do something here. I probably should read one more. I've neglected to do so. I've been so taken up with our conversation. We're speaking with Arnaldo Levine about his experiences years ago from the late 60s and the early 70s and beyond as a pirate radio announcer and presenter. when the BBC had the complete monopoly on all of the media, all media, and people wanted to hear something more because that's going to squish out. But people, you know, when it comes to art and music, people need their...
Yes.
They need the real stuff. And so people started broadcasting from boats 3 miles out into the international waters so they couldn't be... they wouldn't be liable for whatever, you know, for
prosecution.
There you have it. Thanks, but you know, I really, my mind is
prostitution.
Terrible. Prostitution, yeah. And so, and then eventually, landside pirate operations started springing up all over the place, and our own Arnaldo was one of the early guys who was a pirate on land, broadcasting illegally. I'll get to one of these in a minute. So, you were busted quite a few times.
Oh, yeah. We they broke the door down and would get us sometimes where we couldn't escape or we were, you know, in a place where we couldn't get out of or whatever.
Yeah.
And they would catch us and all the police would pour in and the dogs and...
They don't have much to do in England, do they? They really... I mean, they don't have, like, really as many hardened criminals as we have over here. So it must have been real. They were after you, weren't they?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. There wasn't that much to do. But there was a really, you know, pretty peed off afterwards because, you know, I think the post office guys, you know, was built it up much more than what, you know, these are really, you know, subversive people.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, yeah.
And when they came there, you know, everything was so tame, they got really...
They wanted to see guys with, you know, gnarly faces and scars.
Exactly.
And it was just you guys, you know, with your nice fellows playing wonderful music.
It was, yeah, it was fun, you know, just to take the mickey of the police and stuff, you know.
Did they try and put the spin on it that you were subversive? Was it with, was there something going on, too? They were frightened of the political scene back then was...
Yeah, I mean, obviously there was a lot going on, and but they would also do it technically. We were interfering with other wavelengths and all those sort of things.
Yeah, very important wavelengths, like, you know, secret wavelengths.
Exactly.
Yeah, well, that's terrible.
But obviously, we did, you know, we made extra special care not to, buy those crystals to make it right.
So did you ever get bonked on the head? Did anybody ever get violent with you? People wanted to, I'm sure.
They sort of grabbed, like three of them grabbed me, so it wasn't much I could do. But
was it? Did they want to beat the crap out of you for that terrible accent?
Maybe.
Maybe some of them had American relatives.
Was that about that awful accent you're saying? What?
What? No, but I'm sorry. I interrupted you. I couldn't help myself. So, go ahead. Did anybody actually get violent with you and hurt you or try to? Or
No. They were... there were a couple of instances, actually. Some other stations where they got... they did get violent. But we played it... You know, we knew how to act because we knew that's what they wanted, and so
they wanted you to be, you know,
exactly
bellicose or something. They have an excuse to monk you.
Yeah, and also, you know, it was fun. You know, when they would burst in, obviously it was in a squat or something. There was no actual owner, so a lot of people would crash in the corner of the floor. They pretend to be sleeping. Don't they?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just
sleeping here. Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what they're doing.
I have a clue. So you were hauled off. Would you have to spend night in jail, or would you be have to pay a fine mostly? Or
it was just a fine. Yeah, they wouldn't unless that was, we would never have like drugs or anything dangerous around, so that would give them a reason to haul us off. So we tried to be clean and, you know, do it right. So
we try that here at Cowes too.
Yeah,
we try not to be they could burst in any moment, so nobody has anything. We're just very clean cut and we're very quiet.
And when Bossy and Bessie burst in,
I don't see Bossy and Bessie.
Where are they?
I don't know, but if anybody's taking Bossy and Bessie, they're gonna be in so much trouble with me.
Yeah.
Oh, dangy.
Huh.
Oh, we're speaking of the cows who are usually here, but we don't see them right now.
Oh well.
Oh well.
We'll send a search party out for them, I suppose.
We better find them. So you would pay the fine, or you would be, you know, would they be confiscating in front of you? Would they be taking your machinery and you? equipment in front of your face?
Yeah, they would take out all our lovely albums
and
decks and, you know, and things. And we didn't have much anyway to begin with, but that was always the worst things to lose the albums.
That would be terribly painful to see that happen.
Yeah. And
what would happen? Would you make a... Now, sometimes you'd be broadcasting when they'd come in, wouldn't they? So whoever was listening to you would be aware that you were being busted, right?
Oh, yeah. Different ways it happened. You know, I mean, they'd break the door down and we'd just make a mad dash. Or I remember once we were sitting there, all of a sudden the transmitter started leaping into the air. And, like, I think there was a policeman pulling on the antenna from the top of the thing.
Oh, my God. So you're sitting in your cracked house or whatever. Yeah. Oh my god
and
so that must have been a clue that you were about to be busted.
Exactly. So, you know, you shut everything down and get very quiet and turn out the lights and hope for the best. But no, sometimes you'd have to go crazy, you know, running up into the attics or across roofs or back gardens. It was
did
like,
you cross roofs?
Oh, yes. Like the transmitters leaped under my arm and things,
and leaping between buildings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Arnaldo.
At night in the dark.
Jesus Christ. Oh, I'm not supposed to say that. Unbelievable. And so they're busting you. Now, I'm assuming that your listening audience is hearing this going on and they're aware of what's going on, right?
Yes.
Does anybody ever find you to try and offer assistance or do amongst your peers? Mm. There were people who were friends who knew your true identity. They knew that El Supremo was actually Arnaldo Levine.
Yeah.
So what would they do when they would hear this? Would people tell you that they heard you being busted and report to you that they heard you?
Oh, yeah. You know, and often people loved it so much. A lot of the radio guys, they would actually track us down themselves and find us and say, hi, oh, you're doing great. The reception's great out here in God knows where, you know. Because it wasn't just in London, you know. On a good day, I mean, we got letters from Sweden and East Germany, Spain. I mean, it just depends on where the antenna was.
Now, where would they send the letters?
Oh, we had an address, which the post office never stopped.
I was thinking because I thought, of course the post office can bust it because they're going to be getting fan mail.
Yeah.
No, but the post office never saw your...
They never did. And we also used to, like... It's
hysterical.
I know. We also actually did requests before the BBC did, live phone requests.
Yeah.
And we would just hook... You know, we would go down, we'd just hook up a phone to the microphone and do live phonings, or go down to the local telephone boxes, stand there and take requests from people calling in. But they never, like, went there.
They never figured it out.
Somehow they didn't.
Oh my God. You know.
Thank goodness.
I'm looking and seeing how much time we have here. Oh, because we're recording this. I think this is going to be a wonderful interview to have we might have a replay because people will be very interested in, I think, this history of rock and roll or rock music, you know, and how.
So. Well, no, and really it brings that film that's coming out next month, The Boat That Rocked.
Oh, there's a film about pirate radio.
Yeah, it's about, they don't call it Radio Caroline, I think Radio Rock or something they call it, but it's based on a book.
Well, perhaps we'll go see that film and then I'll have you back on.
Mm.
Would you consider being my guest again after the film is released?
It would be delightful.
All right, so what is the name of the film so we can, you know, hawk that?
Yeah, you can Google it. It's got some trailers. The Boat That Rocked.
The Boat That Rocked. And this is about pirate radio.
And it's about the pirate race. Really, it's about beginning Radio Caroline and Ronan O'Reilly, who was the originator of it. And Kenneth Branagh's in it.
Love him.
Philip Hoffman Seymour.
Okay, so are they narrating? Is this a documentary or is this a film?
It's like a comedy.
Oh, I'll be darned.
Yeah.
Oh, so this will be based on the factual base, hopefully.
Yeah, on the book that one of the DJs wrote.
Okay, and who's producing it? Is it Kenneth Branagh himself? Is he producing it?
He directed it, I think.
Oh, wonderful. He's a great director.
I think he directed as well as in it, yeah.
Oh, well, that'll be very fun to see. We'll direct people to go see it.
Yes.
Yeah, the Boat That Rocked. So there you are being busted up and down and jumping over, you know, unbelievable. Did you, what were the places like? Because you said you'd go to croc, you know, I call them croc tosses because I was in Amsterdam, but squatters.
Yeah.
You go to squats and you'd find these places. Would some of the people around who knew you were being busted and, you know, your mm-hmm. fans, would they direct you? Would they help find you places? Would people help find you?
Oh, yeah.
To broadcast from?
Oh, that was the fun. You know, especially in the squatters movement, obviously we were the squatters radio. And so when we knocked on the door, people would go, "All right, it's Radio Concord, right, let's come on in," you know. And so it was
they
wonderful.
Wanted to be a part of this, yeah.
They did. And I mean, we not just squats we did at, but one of our most infamous broadcast was from a houseboat on the Thames, right by the Albert Bridge at on Cheney Walk, and I actually attached the antenna to Mick Jagger's house on the second floor balcony. And
did he know that you were doing that, or was this?
No, his housekeeper was aware, and she didn't like it. Let's put it that way. But that was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And yeah, once in the
did you announce that's what you were doing when you were in that houseboat on the Thames? Did you announce that's what you were doing? Because I would imagine people would come out to see you.
Yeah, we didn't actually announce it, but people did find, some of the other radio guys found us, though.
Yeah.
And it was difficult because you're right down on the water, very low, so, you know, that didn't get to Sweden that time, but
no.
Got out. You know.
But I bet the party was, you know, heard about in Sweden.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. But, so, go ahead.
No, it's just, there was just, the situations were great. In fact, one of the fun ones was actually at my parents' house, because right around the back of them, there was this convent school. But it was just perfect to put this long antenna up this like five-story staircase outside. Mm. And so sort of snuck over and climbed up there and clambering up and reeling out all the wires. And a couple of nuns came by and said, "Excuse me, what are you doing?" I said, "It's okay.
Don't make me slap you, sister." what did you say to her?
So I said, "It's okay. We're students, and we're
you're lied to the nun. Go ahead.
Yeah. Oh my God, a mortal sin.
Lied to the nun. I said, you said we're students. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah,
you.
We're students, and we're trying to pick up extraterrestrial radio signals from outer space.
You did."
And they think, oh, that's
lovely,
nice.
Lovely,
and
dear.
And they walked off.
Say six Hail Marys.
Yeah. If you see Jesus up there, say hello.
Hello.
So you told them you were picking up, you were scanning the cosmos for...
Yeah, for extraterrestrials.
And she bought it.
They loved it. They kind of giggled, oh, that's nice.
That's lovely.
I think that's hysterical.
But then, you know, of course, we got busted that night. And
whom?
By the police and the GPO. It was a huge bust. And
dear.
The mother superior was
did
not
she turn
amused.
You in? Did she
no,
turn
no.
you in?
She, no, when the police told her that we'd attached our antenna to her building.
That you weren't actually listening for ET, you know, emissions.
Exactly. We lied to her.
I bet that really hurt her, Arnold.
Yeah.
Arnaldo. You know, because she thought you were, you know, thought you were just doing a very normal thing. Normally just scanning the horizon, scanning the sky for extraterrestrial emissions.
Yeah. How could she trust anybody again?
I don't know, but...
I'm sure she took it out on the schoolgirls the next day.
Probably did, but if you buy that malarkey, I don't know. Well, let's play another piece of music here that you've brought in from your... You have this magnificent list of songs that were, some of them were big hits in England that we've never heard of here.
Number 18.
I love 18.
Cat Stevens.
Oh, Cat Stevens. Oh, he was so big. Now, when was I? I would have been maybe listening to you, Arnold, because I was in London in 72.
Yes.
Dang. I bet. All right. I was living on in Hampstead Heath. And a little, I was renting a room from a woman named... Oh, God. Well, we'll think about it and we'll come back.
You must have, because my house was about a quarter of a mile from most probably where you were living, because I lived on Hampstead Heath.
You did?
Yeah.
I was very near that railroad pub down the, you know, at the bottom of the, Highgate. What was
Fleet
that?
Road?
What was, oh, geez, I'm so, you know, it's been
Pond
so...
Pond Street?
Yeah, the big pond was at the bottom of the heath.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
And there was a pub down there. I think it was called the Railroad or the Railway.
Yeah, yeah.
Something. And I used to drink down there. And I would be with, what's his name? Who was that big, he couldn't come back to the States to England because he'd been prosecuted as a spy.
Oh, not Charlie Chaplin.
No. Very good. Not that nun, not that Mother Superior you told, but Kim Philby?
Oh, Kim Philby.
Yes. His son.
Yes.
His son and I would drink together.
Mm.
And I can't remember, John Philby, I think his name was. And there were a bunch of very interesting people in that pub. But let's listen to your I bet you I would listen to your station when I was there. Hold on,
because we broadcast all over that area a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure of it. Yeah. I'm sure my landlady was named, her last name was Starkey. She was an American woman, and she'd been married to a guy named John Starkey.
Oh, funny enough,
strange enough, Michael Starkey. Michael Starkey, and I can't for the life of me remember her name, but it'll come to me. Let's listen to number 18,
Kitty.
Kitty by Cat Stevens. Hold on.
I work in the morning, I work in the night. The men on the block, they just laugh at me. I work in the morning, I work in the night. The men on the block, they just laugh at me. But when they're wiping their silver spoons, calling them in for some bread, I'll be laughing way, way out of my head. I'm on the brink. End of my mind isn't coming so fast. And I ain't so dumb as some people think. Cause when they're wiping their silver spoons, pawning them in for some bread, I'll be laughing way, way out of my head.
That was Cat Stevens singing, what was the name of that?
Kitty.
And you told me that Cat Stevens' real name is...
It's like Giorgio something. It's a Greek name.
It's a Greek name. Cat Stevens is actually Greek, and now he's a very famous Muslim guy. Yeah. And he was such a great musician. He wrote such wonderful songs.
Incredible.
So we were saying, I was living in London for a brief time, in and out of London, in 1972. So I know that I was listening to all those stations. We were all listening to them because they were on all the time. You listened.
Right.
And we never were listening to the BBC. I mean, give me a break. And my landlady's name was, I can't remember, Starkey. She was married to Michael Starkey, who was kind of a well-known. And what, I'm just going to run a few things by you, but in those days, the pubs closed at 11. Do you remember that?
Well, actually, 10:30 during the week, and 11 special on Saturday nights.
And they'd kick us all out, and we'd all have to go somewhere else to drink. But it would be a restaurant,
right. Or a club.
Yeah. Now, I very seldom made it to the clubs.
Yeah,
because it was money,
right?
Quite money. But you go to these Greasy Spoon restaurants, which had some kind of, and they would have, you could have wine with your meatball.
Right.
You know,
you hope it was a meatball.
Yeah, you know, it was a meatball. Well, you had to order something. You had to look like you were eating. They bring it. So bring me a pretzel and a bottle of wine. And we used to go to this Greek restaurant in Camden Town called Modidas, I think it was called. I can't believe I remember that.
Wow.
And I was sat there with Doris Lessing. I would sit there with her.
Oh, yes.
She'd come in and order a meatball and a bottle of wine because she liked her wine, too. And all sorts of people would be, you know. Did you do things like that? Did you close the pubs and go and get a meatball somewhere?
Well, except I'm a vegetarian, so it'd be a veggie ball.
You get a veggie ball.
but there was the great thing in London. There was the pubs closed, but then in the, later 67, 68, that's when the all-nighters, you know, the psychedelic all-nighters started.
The big parties that would go on all
exactly.
night long.
Exactly. So they're
like the raves.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just like the raves. So that was an all-night thing. You'd stumble out, you know, at 6 in the morning. And,
yeah. And then I also played, a small gig in where it was a little club called Teddy Bear's Picnic. Did you ever hear that? And all the guys from Monty Python would come in after they would film. And then I was going to, I landed in England. I was very young. I landed in England, London, and we went to where all the Australian people would go there. Mm. You know, when you first get into town. What's that, King's Road?
Oh, Earl's Court.
Earl's Court. Yeah. Everyone was at Earl's Court.
Kangaroo Valley.
Kangaroo Valley. Hello. And Tiny Kangaroo Dance Board. And we went to the White House, I think it was the hotel. And I remember staying at that place, and Buddy Rich's band was coming in. And I had all of Buddy Rich's band and me.
They were raucous, I heard.
Yeah, man. Unbelievable people. And London was a lot of fun. I mean, and Portobello Road was still very funky. And and it was great. And
It was the center of the world, you know, with music, films, fashions. I mean, it really was the happening place. So.
And you must have been pretty happening guy with the ladies too, because there you had you were El Supremo. That must have been a fun time for you.
It's true. It was tough to beat him off. Yeah.
You did have trouble with the girls,
but,
I bet.
But you know, you used to put a fake disguise on, and that helped.
Yeah, that so they would
the Elvis mask
storm you in the street. I told you that.
That happened just once, funny enough.
What happened? You got stormed in the street.
Yeah, we used to go to a show called Top of the Pops.
In
England. But my friend, we used to go backstage because my friend had a BBC pass.
Yeah. Explain what the Top of the Pops is for people who don't.
I suppose it was sort of like American Bandstand here. Mainly just recorded, mimed, the top 40 mimed.
Yeah.
It was the BBC's answer to the best music show ever, Ready, Steady, Go.
Yeah.
Which was on the commercial stations on Friday.
And the folks would come in and lip sync.